Beyond presents spoilers for Iphigenia at Aulis, translated from Euripides by Jane Lady Lumley. This is our spoilers episode looking at the play in detail. Following are some introductory notes intercut with a plain text recording of the dialogue. There won't be a plain text audio at the end because it's not going to be that different in the final cut. We're not going to cut any of the dialogue in the final edit, and there's just going to be a little light SFX added to it. So it's just not really worth it as an exercise. However, you will get all the usual spoiler intermingling here. Now, if you just want to enjoy our production, stop listening now and wait for the release. Or if you're listening in the future, go back and look at it in the podcast list. Seriously, this is an exercise some listeners don't enjoy. If it ain't for you, move on. If you're still listening, let's enter spoiler land.
Spoiler land.
No idea where I was going with that one. Was it even singing? I don't know. So, Iphigenia was translated around 1553-ish by Jane Lady Lumley. Actually, I believe you can quite authentically call her Joanna if you wish. There are a number of possible autobiographical readings of this play to look at why she might have chosen to have written this translation slash adaptation at that particular moment in time. And those readings might affect the choices in the text. I'm not going to do any of that here, though it has come up in our exploring sessions, and I'm sure we may explore that further anon, but I'm not going to do it now. I will merely do my meat and two veg breakdown of the text as for performance, which, of course, it might not be designed for. As such, there isn't that much to discuss, because the staging is fairly simple, and you just need to do the words very well. The major difference between this play and the Euripides original is the chorus, which has been filleted almost to the point of non-existence. I applaud this choice, though part of me kind of wished that Jane went a little further. My dislike of most chori is well known, but I have been persuaded to the general need for the chorus figure here, and we've even had some thoughts. The director of this production, Sarah Blake, has certainly put forward some thoughts, I think in the exploring sessions, certainly behind the scenes, as to ways to deal with the chorus in a production, which we hopefully will explore in the future. Another important general note is that the text is in prose, and I'm fairly certain the earliest prose play we have in English. Supposes by George Gascoigne is until much later, and that generally gets the credit. Certainly, Supposes is a public printing, whereas this is a private manuscript. But there might be some other translations of texts, of Terence, and other things that similarly doesn't attempt to do anything clever with verse. The prose is quite meaty, and the flow of the dialogue isn't always easy to speak, but, as our director and cast found, a little work pays dividends. Whilst I'm not claiming the text is a masterpiece that shouldn't have some editorial intervention, it does actually work perfectly well on its own. That's partly because of Euripides' original, but also because of some of the choices that Jane Lady Lumley makes. The text does open with an argument, the opening of which we kept for use in our production as a prologue. It isn't theatrically exciting, but it is useful. So here is the opening of the argument, as per our recording, performed by Sarah Blake, who also performed the chorus.
The argument of the tragedy. After that the captains of the Grecians with the navy and the other preparations of battle did come together unto the haven of our leader, that from thence they haven sailed towards Troy, there came suddenly such a calm weather that, for want of wind, they could have no passage. Wherefore the host, being grieved that they spent there their time idly, asked counsel of the wise men, to whom Calchas the prophesier answered that if Iphigenia, the daughter of Agamemnon, were sacrificed to the goddess Diana of our leader, that then the Grecians should have a fortunate passage to Troy. Wherefore, the host being called together, Menelaus did persuade his brother Agamemnon to agree that his daughter might be sent for, and because that Clytemnestra, her mother, should be the willinger to let her go, they feigned that she should be married to Achilles, one of the chiefest noblemen of Greece. This excuse none knew, but only Agamemnon, Menelaus, Calchas, and Ulysses. But Agamemnon, after that he had written unto his wife of this matter, repented greatly that which he had done, lamenting much the death of his daughter. Wherefore, in the night, he wrote other letters, privily unto his wife, declaring that she should not need to send the virgin her daughter unto our leader, for her marriage should be deferred unto another time. These letters he delivered afore day, unto an old man, his servant, that he might carry them into Greece.
Now, there is more argument to come, but this is where the play starts, so we're stopping here. I will obviously tell you the rest of the story as we go, as the rest of the argument is a précis of the action. As the argument left us, we open with Agamemnon and an old servant of his, Senex, as written, which is basically just old man, and Agamemnon is trying to write letters. Now, the script has next to no stage directions, so it is unclear when people exit and enter, and for that matter, how on stage the chorus is. They might be here for the opening, but probably they enter later because of what they don't know in terms of what's going on in the plot. Anyway, Agamemnon calls his servant to him, who wants to know why they have to be up this late at night.
Come hither, O thou old man!
I come, but what is the matter, O king?
Thou shalt know anon!
I make haste to come, for my old age is very quick and ready, for both the strength of my limbs and also the sight of mine eyes doth yet continue.
What meaneth this? Methinks I see a star shoot?
Maybe so, indeed. For it is not yet midnight, as it may be judged by the course of the seven stars.
I think so, too. I hear no noise of birds, nor yet of the sea, nor yet of the wind. All things now are quiet and at rest.
What is the cause, O king, that at this time of night thou comest abroad? For all they that be of this haven take their rest still. Yea, and the watchmen are as yet not come from the walls, wherefore I think it meet to go in.
The play paints the scene with words well. It's night, it's quiet, we're alone. Can I go in now? No, says Agamemnon, I have woes to impart.
O thou old man, thou seemest unto me to be very happy, for truly I do think that mortal man to be very fortunate, which, being without honour, doth lead his life quietly. For I cannot judge their estate to be happy which rule in honour.
In these things the glory and renown of man's life doth chiefly consist.
But this renown is very brickle. For to wish for dignity it seemeth very pleasant, but it vexeth them that obtain it. For sometimes the gods, not truly honoured, take vengeance of man's life, and other wiles against men's minds, with care and thought to bring their matters to pass, are wonderfully troubled.
I do not praise this opinion in a noble man, for, O Agamemnon, thou wast not born to have all things chance haply unto thee. For seeing thou art a mortal man, thou must sometime rejoice and sometimes again be sorry. For whether you will or no, this must needs happen, because it is so appointed by the gods.
Having generally flattered, and for the sake of the audience, explained his status, Senex gets round to asking why Agamemnon is writing, and why he's so agitated about it.
But methinks you are writing a letter by candlelight. What is this writing that you have in your hands so, which sometimes you tear, and sometimes then write again, otherwhiles you seal it, and anon unseal it again, lamenting and weeping? You seem to make such sorrow as though you were out of your wit. What is the matter? Oh, king, what is the matter? If you will show it me, you shall tell it to a trusty man and a faithful, for thou knowest me to be one that Tyndarus, thy wife's father, sent with her as part of her dowry, because he thought me to be a messenger meet for such a spouse.
And so Agamemnon tells him, It's a chunky speech, but I've definitely known longer.
Thou knowest that Leda, Thyestes' daughter, had three daughters, Phoebus and Clytemnestra, whom I married, and Helen, whom many noble men desired to have to their wives. But her father Tyndarus, considering what great destruction was threatened to them that obtained her, doubted long whether he should give her in marriage to any of them or no. Wherefore, because he desired to have all things to happen prosperously, he caused all the young men that desired to marry his daughter to come all together into the temple, and there to make a promise each to other before the gods, that if any man, either Grecian or else barbarian, would go about to take Helena from him whom she choose to be her husband, that then they all would with cruel battle take vengeance of that man.
If you don't know your Trojan Wars, this is the choice that will set the whole thing in motion. Well, actually, technically the choice happened a little earlier, but that's an entirely separate element of what the gods are doing. We won't go there. It involves fruit.
And this being thus brought to pass, Tyndarus gave her free liberty to choose among them all whom she liked best, and she chose Menelaus. But I would to God it had not happened. For within a while after, Paris, who, as the common voice saith, was judge between the gods of their beauty, came to Lacedaemon, and he being a goodly young man, and of noble parentage, began to fall in love with her, and so, taking her privily away, brought her to a little village upon the hill Ida. But as soon as these news were brought to Menelaus, he, being as one half out of his wit for anger, began to rehearse the covenant which he and divers other noble men had made betwixt them at the desire of Tyndarus, saying that it was meet that they then should help him, seeing he was oppressed with such a manifest injury, and the Grecians, being wonderfully moved with his pitiful complaint, decreed that they all would with battle invade the Trojans, which so wrongfully had taken away Helen.
The status of Helen in the whole kicking off the Trojan Wars is contradictory in different versions of the story. This is, of course, Agamemnon's version. Anyway, the war was declared.
Wherefore, after that they had prepared weapons, horses, chariots, and all other things necessary for the battle, they choose me to be their captain, because I was Menelaus' brother. But I would that this honor had happened to some other in my place. For now, we having gathered together our host and prepared ourselves ready to battle, are constrained to tarry here idle at this haven, because the winds being against us, we can sail no further. And Calchas, the prophesier, studying long what should be the cause of it, and occasion, at length hath answered, that if my daughter Iphigenia be slain and sacrificed to the goddess Diana, that then the whole host shall not only have free passage to Troy, but also victoriously conquer it. And without the death of my daughter, none of all these things can be brought to pass.
This is heavy stuff. No one wants to have to make this kind of a choice. And initially, Agamemnon makes the most human one. Let's head back home. But he is under pressure to send for her, which he does, and lies to make it happen.
As soon as I heard this, I commanded that the host should be sent home again, for I answered that my daughter should never be slain through my consent. But I, using all manner of means to persuade my brother to the contrary, yet notwithstanding, I was so moved with his earnest desire that at length I, agreeing to his cruel request, wrote a letter to my wife that she should send my daughter hither. And because she should be the better willing to let her go, I feigned that she should be married to Achilles, because he was so desirous of her that he denied to go to battle without he might have her to his wife. So that now I have determined the death of my daughter under the color of marriage. And none knoweth of this, save only Menelaus, Calchas, and Ulysses.
So his daughter is coming under the impression it's for a marriage, and having sent for her, he tries to write a letter to organise some backsies, which is where we came in. Go, servant person, deliver the letter.
But now, I, repenting me of the message which I wrote to my wife of, have here, in this letter, denied all that I said before, so that if you will carry this letter unto Greece, I will declare unto you all that is contained in it, because I know you to be a faithful servant, both to my wife and me.
Show me, I pray you, what answer I shall make to your wife, agreeable to the letter.
Tell her that she shall not need at this time to send my daughter hither, for her marriage shall be deferred unto another time.
Will not Achilles, think you, be angry, for that under the colour of him you have determined the death of your daughter?
Achilles beareth the name only, but he is not partaker of the thing. Neither knoweth he what craft we go about.
Thou hast prepared grievous things, O king, for thou hast determined to sacrifice thy own child under the colour of marriage.
Alas, I was then wonderfully deceived, for the which I am now marvellously troubled. Wherefore, I pray thee, make haste, and let not thy old age hinder thee in this journey.
I make haste to go, O king.
Well, he would haste to go, if the king didn't keep calling him back. There's room for some light comedy on stage at this point, though perhaps not too much. It is a dark play.
Do not stay by the pleasant springs. Tarry not under the shadowing trees. Neither let any sleep hinder thee.
Do not you think any such slothfulness in me, O king.
I pray you mark well the way and look about it diligently, lest that my wife, preventing you, happen to come hither with my daughter in the meantime.
It shall be done even so.
Make haste, I pray thee. And if thou meet my wife, turn her back again.
But what shall I do that your wife and daughter may believe me?
Deliver them this token which is enclosed in this letter. Go, quickly, for the day beginneth to appear. I pray thee, help me now in this matter, for there is no man to whom all things have chanced happily.
Objections raised and passed, proof of postage obtained, exit Agamemnon. There are no stage directions, but Senex moves to go separately, but he is stopped by Menelaus, who has entered, and the chorus must enter around here too. They could have been here before, as I say, but it wouldn't quite make sense. This is a fiddly bit of stage action. You would really need to work through the movement, the exits and entrances to make it flow. A lot happens in almost no time at all in terms of text. The chorus, however, helpfully, describe the action.
What is this? Methinks I see Menelaus striving with Agamemnon's servant.
Darest thou, O Menelaus, commit so grievous an offence in taking away those letters which is neither meet nor lawful that thou shouldst see?
Oh, go thy way, thou art too faithful to thy master.
Truly you have objected to me a good reproach.
Thou hast deserved punishment.
It is not meet that thou shouldst open those letters which I carry.
Neither oughtest thou to bring such a mischief upon all Greece.
Thou strivest in vain, Menelaus, for I will not deliver my letters to thee.
Thou shalt not pass with them!
And I will not leave them behind me!
If thou wilt not deliver them to me, I will break thy head with my mace!
I pass not for that, for I think it a good thing to die for my master's cause.
Oh, thou froward fellow, deliver me thy letters and make no more business here!
Help! O Agamemnon, I suffer injury here of Menelaus, for with strong hand he hath taken away your letter, and he passeth not of honesty nor yet of right!
Enter Agamemnon as Senex has the letter taken from him. Looks like the cat will be out of the bag shortly.
Halt! What business and contention is there amongst you?
I ought rather to tell the matter than you, Menelaus.
What have you to do, Menelaus, with my servant? Or what cause have you to strive with him, and to take away that which pertaineth to me?
Turn toward me, I pray you, that I may tell you all the matter.
Exit Senex, somewhere around here, so that Menelaus and Agamemnon can square off. You're up to something, Agamemnon. How dare you read my mail, Menelaus, etc.
Think you that I, the son of Atreus, am afraid to look upon thee, Menelaus?
Seest thou, O Agamemnon, these thy letters which contain thy crafty counsel?
I see them very well. Thou shalt not keep them long.
Oh, surely I will not deliver them to thee before that I show them unto the whole host.
Wilt thou desire to know that which doth not become thee, and darest thou open the seals of my letters?
As soon as I had opened thy letter, I marveled what mischief had put those things in thy mind which thou hast privily declared in this letter.
Where didst thou get my letter?
I took them from your servant, for I, watching by the host to hear of your daughter's coming, by chance met with him.
Do you think it meet that you should know my matters? I pray you, is not this the token of a naughty and unshamefast man?
Oh, it was my pleasure so to do, for I owe no duty to thee.
Think you that I can suffer this so grievous a thing that I should neither do my business, nor yet rule mine own house after my fancy?
Surely you change your mind oftentimes, for sometime you think one thing, and by and by again you're in another mind.
Indeed you file your words well, but a learned tongue disposed to evil is a naughty thing.
Oh, yay, and an unconstant and averse mind is as evil, but...
And now, after this sparring, Menelaus is really going to let Agamemnon know what he thinks of him.
Now, I will overcome you with your own words, if you will not deny them for anger, for I will not speak them greatly for your praise. Do not you remember that when you desired to be made captains over the Grecians, ye seemed to refuse it, although indeed you wished for it? How lowly then did you show yourself, taking every man by the hand, and keeping open household, and saluting every man after his degree, as though you would have bought your honour with the good will of the people. But as soon as you had obtained this honour, you began to change your conditions, for you refused the friendship of them which had shown themselves friendly to you afore. And then ye waxed proud, keeping yourself secretly within your house.
Menelaus is not a fan of flip-flopping, of a certain amount of play-acting on Agamemnon's part in the past. He moves on to a question of Agamemnon's competence as a leader.
But it doth not become a good man to change his fashions after that is in honour. For he ought then to be more faithful to his friends, when that is in a place to do them pleasure. I have objected this reproach unto you, because I myself have had proof of it. After that, ye, with a whole host, were come to this heaven, you were careless. But when you could have no passage over the sea, and the Grecians desired license to go home, refusing to spend their time idly here, then you, being wonderfully troubled, fearing lest an evil report should rise of you, because you, being captain over 1,000 ships, should not overcome Troy, you ask counsel of me what you have do, that you have neither lose dignity, nor yet dishonour your name.
And now we get to the whole murdering your child bit. How dare you flip-flop on this issue?
Wherefore, as soon as Calchas the prophesier had answered that the Grecians should both pass the sea quietly and also conquer Troy if your daughter were sacrificed to the goddess Diana, then you were very glad and promised of your own accord to give your daughter to be sacrificed, and being not compelled by any power, you sent unto your wife for your daughter, feigning that she should be married to Achilles. But now suddenly you have changed your mind and have written other letters, saying that you will not agree to the death of your own child. Take heed that you do not deny this, for the heaven itself can bear witness of your sayings. Truly, this same doth happen to divers other men, which in the beginning, when they take any weighty matter in hand, do labour very diligently till they have obtained it, and then they leave it off shamefully, which shame doth chance sometimes through the fearfulness of the subject, and sometimes when they do rule the commonwealth, which are a meat for it.
Shame on you. You put all the work in, and then you turn away. Think of our men who've come all this way. How could you betray them for your daughter?
But now, I do chiefly lament the state of the unfortunate Grecians, which when they took in hand a noble enterprise against barbarians, are constrained through your occasion and your daughter's with great dishonour to live the same. Wherefore, truly, I think that no captain ought to be chosen for dignity, nor yet for favour, but rather for wit. For he that shall rule an host, ordering wisdom to excel all other!
The chorus steps in at this point, a thought voiced, though probably not heard by our interlocutors. The chorus is largely spectral here. They will become more involved slowly. This comment is deceptively bland.
Surely it is a grievous thing that one should fall out with another, but especially that any contention should be among brethren.
Like that the issue here is that these two are just having an argument? I mean, Agamemnon grabs the right of reply. Well, if you don't like me, let me tell you of you. You're the one who started it all. It was your wife, damn it.
Now I will tell you of your faults, Menelaus. But in few words, lest I should seem to be unshamefast. Wherefore, I will speak to you as it becometh one brother to another. Tell me, I pray you, why do you sigh so? Who hath done you any injury? Do you lament the taking away of your wife? But we cannot promise you to get her again for you, for you yourself have been the occasion of your own trouble. Wherefore, seeing I have not offended you, there is no cause that I should suffer punishment for that which I am not guilty of. Doth my preferment trouble you? Or else doth the desire of your beautiful wife vex you? For evil men diverse times have such like desires. And although, truly, I am to blame, for that I have not better determined my matters, yet I fear me lest you are much more to be reprehended, for that you, being delivered of an evil wife, cannot be contented.
The chorus questions the logic of the argument. That's not what you said earlier. No one likes people who change their mind in this universe. Yet we're keen on not killing children ourselves. That's the position of the chorus. Don't kill children.
These sayings truly do not agree with that which was spoken before. Yet notwithstanding, they do teach us well that we ought not willingly to hurt our children.
Agamemnon and Menelaus now get petulant about how rubbish they are as friends.
Alas, I, wretch, have never a friend!
Yes, you have diverse friends, except you will neglect them.
But it doth become friends to lament with one another.
If you would have friends, you were best to love them whom you desired to help, and not them whom you would hurt.
Why do you not think that Greece needeth help in this matter?
Yes, but I think that both you and Greece also are bewitched of some god.
Brother, methinks you are too proud of honour. Wherefore I must seek some other way and get me other friends.
Having accused Menelaus of being too proud to be his friend, enter Nuncius, a messenger, to distract the arguing captains with news. I'm sure it will be good news. Oh, Iphigenia has arrived and she's brought her mother, Clytemnestra. Agamemnon is not having a good day.
Oh, Agamemnon, thou valiant captain, I have brought to thee Iphigenia, thy daughter, whom thou didst send for. And with her is come Clytemnestra, thy wife, and Orestes, that thou mightst be comforted with the sight of them. I have made haste to bring you this news, because I see all the Grecians waiting for the coming of your daughter, as it were for some strange thing. And some of them say you have sent for her by cause you are desirous to see her. Other judge that she should be married, and some thinketh that she should be sacrificed to the goddess Diana. Tell me, O king, I pray thee, to whom shall she be married? But now, let us leave to speak of such things, for it is need and time to prepare that which shall be necessary for the wedding. Wherefore, I pray you, Menelaus, also be merry, for this day, as I trust, shall be very fortunate to Iphigenia.
Thou hast said well, wherefore go thou in, for all things will chance happily to thee.
Exit Nuncius, who has told us about the rumours and stories that everyone now believes, and is now very publicly caught in a snare. pretty much of his own making. What is he going to say to his wife? And he can imagine what questions his daughter will ask him of.
But what shall I say, which am thus in trouble, and yet may not bewail my own misery for this occasion? They which are of mean estate seem unto me very happy, for they may complain of their misery and bewail with tears the death of their children. But to noble men no such thing is granted, for I dare not lament my unfortunate chance, and yet it grieveth me that I may not show my misery. Wherefore I know not what I should say unto my wife, nor with what face I should look upon her. Alas, she hath undone me because of her coming, though indeed she thinketh she hath a good occasion, for she believeth that her daughter shall be married, in which things she shall find me a liar. Again I have pity of the little girl, for I know she will speak thus unto me. Oh, father, will you kill me? If you forsake me, of whom shall I ask remedy? Alas, what answer shall I make to this? Surely nature ought to move me to pity, and if that would not, yet shame should let me. Alas, alas, what a great reproach is it, the father to be the occasion of his own child's death! How therefore am I troubled? On this part, pity and shame. On the other side, honour and glory doth much move me.
And to this plaint of self-pity, the chorus start to show a bit of teeth. You think you've had it bad, Agamemnon?
We also lament your chance, so much as it becometh women to lament the misery of princes.
What about the actual victims here? Menelaus now changes his position a bit, having witnessed Agamemnon's anguish.
I pray you, brother, let me see your hand.
I give you liberty, for I will put all the victory in your hand.
I will not flatter you, brother, but I will show you faithfully my opinion. Surely, when I saw you in such misery, I was moved with brotherly pity, and lamented much your chance. Wherefore, now I counsel you not to slay your daughter, neither to do yourself any damage for my cause, for it is not meet that through my occasion you should hinder either yourself or any of your children. For I, weighing the matter, consider what a grievous thing it is to kill your own child. And beside, I pity much her, because I do consider she's my kinswoman, and hath not deserved to die for Ellen's cause. Wherefore, I will counsel you not to sacrifice your daughter, but rather to send home again the whole host. And as for my part, I will agree unto you. For I, considering how a father ought to love his child, have changed clean my opinion. For I know a good man ought to follow that which is good.
Again, the chorus as commentary continues, and Agamemnon looks like he has his out.
Oh, Menelaus, you have spoken like a noble man.
I praise you, Menelaus, because you have changed your mind so gently.
Surely ambition and desire of wealth have caused much strife between brethren. Albeit I do abhor such cruel brotherhood.
Although you are agreed, yet I am compelled to slay my daughter.
Sorry, what now? Didn't you just hear Menelaus? He changed his mind? You're sort of... No, says Agamemnon. She's here now. The army will require me to follow through. And now he's the one trying to persuade Menelaus.
Why? Nobody will compel you.
Yes. Truly, the whole host will require her of me.
If you will send her home again, you need not to deliver her to the Grecians.
If I should deceive them here, then they would punish me when I come home.
You ought not truly to fear so much the host, for they know not of this matter.
But I doubt lest Calchas show them of it.
You may remedy that in punishing him.
Brother, do you not fear Ulysses?
Yes, truly, for it doth lie in his power to hurt either you or me.
I doubt that, for he studieth very much to get the goodwill and favour of the people.
He is desirous indeed of ambition and honor.
If he should gather the people together and declare unto them what Calchas hath said of my daughter, surely he might quickly persuade them to slay you and me, that they might get her the easier. But if it should chance that I should fly, then truly they would not only seek to destroy me, but also my children. Now therefore, seeing that I am in such trouble that I know not what to do, I shall desire you, O Menelaus, not to show this news unto my wife, before that Iphigenia be already sacrificed, that I may be less moved with her piteous complaint. And I pray you also, O ye women, not to open this matter.
So we have to do it now, or Ulysses will make the army rise and kill us all anyway. It's a zero-sum game. Kill Iphigenia, or don't kill her, and we all will die. Exit Menelaus without another word. And Agamemnon tells the women, the chorus, and maybe the audience, that the discussion is closed. He exits into his lodging, or most of the way, while the chorus lament how awful it is to be in charge. It's easier to be poor and happy people. We've heard this argument before in quite a few neoclassical works. And with that sentiment, they tell us of the arrival of Clytemnestra and Iphigenia.
Truly, we may see now that they are most happy, which, being neither in too high a state, nor yet oppressed with too much poverty, may quietly enjoy the company of their friends. But behold, here cometh Clytemnestra the queen, and Iphigenia her daughter, being adorned with all noblesse. Let us therefore meet her with much mirth, lest she should feel abashed at her coming into a strange country.
Enter Clytemnestra and Iphigenia, on a chariot, no less. Now that will push the budget a tad, but there are workarounds for a smaller stage. Agamemnon has either not quite gone into his lodging at this point, or he has come out at this moment. The play ramps up the dramatic ironies by having Clytemnestra and Iphigenia really happy to see him. He is less so to see them. In this lengthy exchange with Iphigenia, her constant questioning and his ambiguous responses make this a painful listen.
This truly is a token of good luck that so many noble women meet us. Let us therefore come down from our chariot, that they may bring us to Agamemnon's lodging.
I pray you, mother, be not offended with me, though I do embrace my father.
O King Agamemnon, I am come hither to fulfil your commandment in that you sent for me.
And I also, O father, am here come, being not a little joyous that I may see you.
Neither am I sorry of your company, daughter. For of all my children, I love you best.
What is the cause, father, that you seem to be so sad, seeing you say you are so joyful at our coming?
You know, daughter, that he which ruleth an host shall have diverse occasions to be troubled.
Although indeed a captain over an host shall be disquieted with sundry causes, yet I pray you set aside all such troubles, and be merry with us, which are therefore come unto you.
I will follow your counsel, daughter, for I will rejoice as long as I may have your company.
But what meaneth this, father, that you do lament so?
I have good cause to mourn. For after this day, I shall not see you again of a long while.
I do not understand, O father, what you mean by this.
Truly, daughter, the more wittily you speak, the more you trouble me.
If it be so, father, then I will study to seem more foolish, that you may be delighted.
Surely I am constrained to praise greatly your wit, for I do delight much in it.
I pray you then, father, set away all other business, and tarry amongst us your children.
Indeed, I am desirous so to do, although I cannot as yet have liberty.
What is the matter, father, that you tarry here so long in this haven?
Truly, we are desirous to go hence, but we can have no passage.
Where, I pray you, dwell those people which are called the Trojans?
They are under the kingdom of Priamus.
I would to God I might go with you into those parts.
I will grant you your request, daughter, for I am determined to take you with me.
Shall I go alone, or else with my mother?
No, truly, you shall neither have the company of me
nor yet of your mother.
Why? Will you set me in a strange house?
Leave to inquire of such things, for it is not lawful that women should know them.
Make haste, O father, to go unto Troy, that you may come quickly back again from thence.
Oh, I do, daughter, but I must sacrifice first.
Shall I be at the sacrifice, father?
Hey, daughter, for you must be one of the chiefest.
Why? Shall I dance about it?
Truly, I count myself more happy because you do not understand me. Go your way, therefore, and make you ready with the other virgins. But let me first take my leave of you, for this day shall separate you and me far asunder. Although this your marriage shall be very noble, yet truly it doth grieve me to bestow you so far off, whom with such care I have brought up.
Exit Iphigenia. Those of you who followed our looks at Abraham and Isaac mystery plays will recognise the game here. Shall I help at the sacrifice, Daddy? It's dark stuff, and it really gives the actors something to play. Clytemnestra is more suspicious of the scene she has watched. The more offhand and secretive Agamemnon is, the worse her suspicions get.
Although you are somewhat troubled, yet I am not of so slender a wit, but that I can easily be persuaded, seeing that both the custom and also time doth require. But tell me, I pray you, shall not Achilles be my daughter's husband?
Yes. Truly.
He is a meet marriage indeed. But I am desirous to know where he dwelleth.
His dwelling is about the flood of Phidna.
When, I pray you, shall the wedding be?
Truly very shortly, for we make haste to go hence.
If it be so, then you have need to sacrifice that which must be done before the wedding.
I will go about it, therefore, that the marriage may be done the quicklier.
Where, I pray you, shall the feast be?
Here, because of the host.
Show me, I pray you, the place, that I may be partaker of it.
I pray you, wife, obey me in this matter.
What cause have you, O king, to say so? For when did I ever disobey you?
I am determined to marry my daughter here.
Shall not I, being her mother, be at the wedding?
No, truly, for she shall be married amongst the Grecians.
Where, then, shall I tarry?
It is best for you to go again to Greece.
If I leave my daughter behind me, who shall then be in my stead?
Truly, I will do your office, for it doth not become you to be amongst such a company of men.
Although that it be not meet, indeed, yet the mother ought to be at the marriage of the daughter.
But I think you have more need to be amongst your other daughters at Greece. Make you therefore ready to go home.
I will not go home yet, for you ought to do sacrifice only, but I must see all things made ready for the marriage.
Exit Clytemnestra, ostensibly because she is annoyed that all he can think about is a sacrifice, not a wedding. But she knows something is up, and she is watching him. He knows he can't keep this a secret for long.
I have laboured in vain, for although I have used deceit and craft, yea, unto my dearest friends, yet I cannot fulfil my purpose.
And with that, exit Agamemnon, who finally, as an actor, gets a break. And we get an additional complication to this kind of black comedy. Enter Achilles, the supposed intended. But he's not here for a wedding, he's on war business.
Where is Agamemnon, the captain of the Grecians? Or who of his servants will call him unto me? For I, being moved with the piteous complaints of the people, am compelled to inquire of their captains the cause. Why they, being constrained to forsake both their wives, their children, and also their country, now lie here idly without any valiant deeds doing.
The demonic farce continues as Clytemnestra enters, delighted to see her new son-in-law. And Achilles, he seems initially to be hitting on her. He's not. It's probably more prudish warrior concerns about not having a woman amongst the men, you know, upsets morale. But, well, you'll see what I mean.
As soon
as I heard your voice. Oh, Achilles, I came out hastily to meet you.
What woman is this that seemeth so beautiful?
I do not marvel, though you know not me, whom you never saw. Yet nevertheless, I must needs praise your shamefastness.
Who are you, I pray you, that you, being a woman, dare come amongst such a company of men?
My name is Clytemnestra, and I am the daughter of Leda, and the wife of Agamemnon.
You have declared very well in few words what you are. And although you be a noble woman, yet it is not lawful for me to tarry here.
Whither you go, I pray you, let us shake hands together, for I trust this marriage shall be very fortunate unto you.
It is not lawful that I should be so familiar with Agamemnon's wife.
Yes, truly, you may well enough, seeing you shall marry my daughter.
Sorry, what now? And the confusion unravels.
I do not know what marriage you mean. Except you have heard some news, which, because you know to be untrue, you report as a false tale.
I do not marvel, although you will not be acknowing of this marriage, for it is the fashion of all young men to keep it secret for a while.
No, truly, I will not dissemble with you, for indeed I never desired the marriage of your daughter.
If it be so indeed, then I marvel as much of your sayings as you did of mine.
Tell me, I pray you, wherefore you have spoken these things. For it may happen that both of us are deceived.
Think you that it is not a great shame unto me that I have told such a lie? But I will go now and know the truth of all this matter.
Tell me, I pray you, ere you go hence, where your husband is, for I am very desirous to speak with
Terry.
Clytemnestra is probably quite keen to see him as well, but instead enters Senex, the old servant, who is obeying his conscience and telling all. The chorus, I should point out, have been remarkably silent throughout this part. Cowards.
Terry! Terry, I pray you! Oh, Achilles, for I must speak both with you and also with Clytemnestra.
Who doth call me so hastily?
It is even I, the servant of Agamemnon.
If you have anything to say to us, come near and tell it quickly, without any circumstance. For you need not to doubt us, for I know you have ever served diligently both me and also divers of mine ancestors.
Because I have been ever faithful unto you, therefore now I must open unto you a very secret thing. Truly Agamemnon hath determined to slay Iphigenia, his daughter, in sacrifice.
Surely, I think either you be mad to tell such an unlikely tale, or else, if it be so indeed, Agamemnon to be half out of his wit to agree to such a cruel murder.
No, truly, he is not mad, although indeed he hath played the madman's part.
Wherefore, I pray you, hath he pretended to do so cruel a deed?
Truly, he is compelled to do so, for Calchas the prophesier hath answered that the Grecians cannot sail to Troy without the death of your daughter.
If this be true, wherefore then did he feign that she should be married?
That was because you should be the better willing to let her come.
How, I pray you, do you know this?
Agamemnon himself showed me of this thing. For once he did repent himself so much of the consenting to his daughter's death, that he was determined to send you another letter by me, which was contrary to the first.
Why did you not deliver them to me?
As I was bringing them, I happened to meet with Menelaus, who with violence took them from me.
And exit Cynix, the crap postman. Clytemnestra and Achilles swap notes. They both agree it's bad, and she appeals to Achilles to help.
Hear you this, O Achilles?
Yea, truly, I hear it well, and I pity you much, for I do even abhor this cruel deed of your husband.
Now, therefore, seeing this thing is chanced so unfortunately unto me, I shall most earnestly desire you, O Achilles, to help me now in this misery. For the reproach shall be yours, seeing my daughter, being sent for under the colour of your name, shall now be slain. Besides this, if you do not help us, we can by no means avoid this mischief, for I alone, being a woman, cannot persuade Agamemnon. And if you forsake us, none shall dare to take our part.
Truly, it is a very troublesome thing to have children, for we are even by nature compelled to be sorry for their mishaps.
Oh, you're back in the room, are you, Chorus? Yeah, children, huh? Achilles agrees to help.
My mind is troubled more and more, for I am wonderfully moved with your piteous complaint. Wherefore, seeing you have required help at my hand, I will promise you to deliver both you and your daughter from this misery. If by any means I may withstand the cruel pretense of Agamemnon and his brother, for this matter pertaineth unto me also, because that if she being sent for in my name should be slain, then truly it would turn to no small dishonour to me. Wherefore, I am compelled to help your daughter so much as shall lie in my power, not only for that I am moved with pity, but also because it should sound no little reproach to me if that through my occasion your daughter should be slain.
Surely you have spoken very well, and like a noble man. How, therefore, I pray you, shall I give you thanks worthy of your deserts? For if I should praise you too much, I fear lest I should move you to hatred rather than to pity, for then you would judge me to be a flatterer, which, of all noble men, is to be abhorred. Again, if I should give you fewer thanks than you deserve, then I may well be counted unthankful, so that now I doubt what to do. But seeing you so gently have promised me your help, I will submit both me and my daughter under your rule. Wherefore, if it please you, I will send for her hither, that she herself may require help at your hand.
Achilles doesn't want to see Iphigenia, though. He's really prudish in many ways. Don't let her mingle with men. Keep her with you. Is he trying to help? Or is he sort of only trying to help, but not really wanting to take a stand? You know, you keep her with you and try to persuade Agamemnon to change his mind kind of thing, rather than with me, which means I'd have to do something?
No, truly, I think it not meet that she should come abroad. For surely men would judge evil of her if she should come much amongst company. It is best, therefore, that you keep her at home. And as for my part, truly, I will do as much for her as shall lie in my power. But I think it best that you should prove first if you can persuade her father not to deliver her.
Surely I shall not prevail with him, for he is so fearful that he dareth do nothing without the consent of the whole host.
Although you think you shall not persuade him, yet it is meet that first you should show him what a grievous thing it is to be called a destroyer of his own children. And if he be nothing moved with that, then you may lawfully seek help at other folks' hands.
Give pity a chance. Clytemnestra agrees. It's a terrible plan, but what can you do? Call Achilles if you need assistance.
You have spoken very well, wherefore I will follow your counsel. But tell me, I pray you, where shall I find you, that I may show you what answer he doth make me?
I will tarry here till you come again. For surely, if I should go with you, you should be slandered by me.
In all this matter I will be ruled by you. Wherefore, if I obtain my suit, the thanks shall be yours, and not mine. But now here cometh Agamemnon. Show me, I pray you, therefore, what I should answer him, if he ask for my daughter, seeing that she maketh such moan.
Exit Achilles, who I'm not really sure wants to get involved. Enter Agamemnon, who wants Iphigenia.
I am glad that I have met with you, O Clytemnestra, for I have diverse things to talk with you up.
If you have anything to say to me, tell me, I pray you, for I am ready to hear.
First call out my daughter, that she may go with me to the temple of the goddess Diana, for I have prepared all things ready for the sacrifice.
And this is a bit odd. Why does she agree? Have it out first. Don't bring her out. Enter Iphigenia with young Orestes, who is probably carried on by a servant. depends on how old you want to make him. The presence or absence of Orestes is one of those problems you need to decide with this text, because he seems to pop up whenever anyone needs him at a moment's notice, and they never really get to grips with how to get him on and off. Anyway, he's there. Clytemnestra knows Agamemnon is lying. Iphigenia senses something is wrong.
You have spoken well, though indeed your doings do not agree with your words. But go your ways, daughter, with your father, and take with you your brother Orestes.
Why do you weep and lament so, daughter?
Alas, how should I suffer this trouble, seeing that all mortal men vexed both in the beginning, the midst, and the ending of their misery?
What is the cause that all you are so sorrowful?
I will show you, if you will promise me to tell me one thing, which I will require.
Yes, truly, I will grant you your request, for I did think to have asked it of you.
I hear say that you go about to slay your own child.
Ah, it's the odd, you must tell me the truth trick. Somewhere around here, Orestes is probably cleared, hence the need of a servant. Nobody else is going to exit at this point. Having promised to speak truth, Agamemnon tries to wriggle out of doing so.
What? You have spoken those things which you ought neither to say nor yet to think.
Answer me, I pray you, to this question as you promised.
It is not lawful for me to answer you to those things which you ought not to know.
I have not inquired of anything that doth not become me, but take you heed rather lest you make such an answer as you ought not.
Who hath done you any injury, or who hath given you cause to say so?
Ask you this question of me, as though your craft could not be perceived.
Nice covering for Senex. Clytemnestra doesn't give away her sources, but Agamemnon is forced to acknowledge the truth.
Alas, I am troubled more and more, for all my secret counsel is now openly declared.
Indeed, I have heard of all that which you have prepared for your daughter. Yea, and you yourself have partly confessed it in holding your peace.
I am constrained to hold my peace, for I have told you so manifest a lie that I cannot deny.
And that's the cue for Clytemnestra to let rip. After everything I gave up to marry you, you do this?
Hearken now, I pray you, therefore, for I must needs tell you of your fault. Do you not remember that you married me without the goodwill of all my friends, taking me away with strong hand after that you had slain my other husband, Tantalus? Which cruel deeds my brother Castor and Pollux would have revenged, except Tyndarus, my father, had delivered you out of that peril, so that by his means you did obtain me to be your wife, who after I was married never showed myself disobedient unto you in anything. And then I happened to have 3 sons at one birth, and afterward 1 daughter. And will you now slay her, knowing no just cause? Why? For if any man should ask you, if any man should ask of you the cause of the death of your daughter, you would answer, for Helen's sake, which can be no lawful cause, for it is not meet that we should slay our own child for a naughty woman's sake, neither destroy those that by nature we ought to love, for their cause only, which are hated of all men.
And why, just why, is it worth the price?
Besides this, if you kill my daughter,
what lamentation must I needs make when I shall go home and want the company of her, considering that she was slain by the hand of her own father? Wherefore, if you will not be moved with pity, take heed, lest you compel me to speak those things that do not become a good wife. Yea, and you yourself do those things that a good man ought not... But tell me now, I pray you, what good do you obtain by the death of your daughter? Do you look for a fortunate return? Truly, you cannot by this means get that, for that journey cannot end happily, which is begun with mischief. Besides this, surely you shall stir up the gods to anger against you, for they do even hate them that are man-quellers. Again, you cannot enjoy the company of your other children when you come home, for they will even fear and abhor you, seeing that willingly you do destroy your daughter. And you shall not only fall into this mischief, but also you shall purchase yourself the name of a cruel tyrant. For you were chosen the captain over the Grecians to execute justice to all men, and not to do both me and also your children such an injury. For it is not meet that your children should be punished for that which pertaineth not to you. Neither ought I to lose my daughter for Helena's cause, who hath never showed herself faithful to her husband.
It is meet, O Agamemnon, that you should follow your wife's counsel, for it is not lawful that a father should destroy his child.
Thank you, Chorus. But is anyone listening? Clytemnestra and the chorus all say no. Now it's time for Iphigenia to have a go, kneeling and pleading for life.
Now, O father, I kneeling upon my knees and making most humble suit to most earnestly desire you to have pity upon me, your daughter, and not to slay me so cruelly. For you know it is given to all mortal men to be desirous of life. Again, remember that I am your daughter, and how you seemed ever to love me best of all your children, in so much that you were wont ever to desire that you might see me married to one worthy of my degree. And I did ever wish again that I might live to see you an old man, that you might have much joy both of me and also of your other children. And will you now consent to my death, forgetting both that which you were wont to say, and also what pain you and my mother took in bringing me up, knowing no were cause in me worthy of death? For what have I to do with Helena? But now, father, seeing you are nothing moved with my lamentation, I will call hither my young brother Orestes, for I know he will be sorry to see his sister slain. And again, you cannot choose, but you must needs have pity either of him or else of me. Considering what a lawful request we do desire, for you know that all men are desirous of life, and there is no wise man, but he will choose rather to live in misery than to die.
And Agamemnon doesn't relent. The host, the gods themselves, are against us. What can we do?
I know in what things I ought to show pity, and wherein I ought not. And I love my children, as it becometh a father, for I do not this of myself, nor yet for my brother's sake, but rather by compulsion of the host. For the gods have answered that they cannot pass the sea without your death, and they are so desirous to go thither that they care not what trouble and misery they suffer so that they may see it. Wherefore, it lieth not in my power to withstand them, for I am not able to make any resistance against them. I am therefore compelled, daughter, to deliver you to them.
Exit Agamemnon. And I will just put in one tiny defence for him. I mean, I'm not going to try this very hard, but, you know, devil's advocate thing. The text has mostly talked about men or his promises to the men, and sure, there is a host of men who are clearly determined for Iphigenia to die, so he is sort of backed into a corner here, unless he's going to get slaughtered. But we haven't had that many references to the whole gods messing around with humans thing. The gods really mess these people up, and if they weren't involved, this would be clearly a very different story. But it's not. So Agamemnon maybe feels that he can't do anything else. He still makes the wrong call anyway, and it's clearly terrible. Clytemnestra and Iphigenia now have a last moment together.
Alas, daughter, into what misery are both you and I driven, seeing that your own father will consent to your death.
Alas, mother, this is the last day that ever I shall see you. Oh, unhappy Troy, which hath nourished and brought up that wicked man Paris. Oh, unfortunate Venus, which didst promise to give Helena to him, for you have been the cause of my destruction. Though indeed I through my death shall purchase the Grecians a glorious victory. Alas, mother, it was an unlucky time was I born. And my own father, which hath consented unto my death, doth now forsake me in this misery. I want to God that the Grecians had never taken in hand this journey. Methinks, mother. I see a great company of men coming hither. What are they, I pray you?
Literally yonder is Achilles.
Let me then, I pray you, go hence. I may hide my face. I am ashamed.
What cause have you so to do?
Truly, because it was said that I should have been his wife.
Daughter, you must lay away all shamefastness now, for you may use no niceness, but rather prove by what means you may best save your life.
Iphigenia might be bashful before a would-be husband, but Clytemnestra is delighted to see him as a possible saviour. Enter Achilles to the scene, and kind of the chorus, who report how sad everyone is of the news.
Alas, Clytemnestra! How unhappy art thou, for truly there is great talking of thee in the whole city.
Whereof, I pray you?
Of your daughter. How she shall be slain.
You have brought me very evil news. But tell me, I pray you, doth nobody speak against it?
Yes, Achilles did, and it didn't make him popular. But he did stand up to the host, and has brought a small force with him.
Yes, I myself have been in danger of my life, because I took your daughter's part.
Who, I pray you, dare hurt you?
Truly, the whole host.
Do not your own countrymen of Myrmidon help you?
No, truly. For even they also did speak against me, saying that I was in love with her, and therefore I did prefer mine own pleasure above the commodity of my country.
What answer then made you unto them?
I said that I ought not to suffer her to be slain, which was reported by her own father that she should have been my wife.
You said well indeed, for Agamemnon sent for her from Greece, feigning that it was for that purpose.
But though I could not prevail against such a multitude of people, yet I will do as much as shall lie in my power for you.
Alas, then you alone shall be compelled to strive against many.
Do you not see a great company of harnessed men?
I pray God they be your friends.
Yes, truly, that they be.
Then I hope my daughter shall not die.
No, that she shall not, if I can help her.
But for all the hope of his own company, Ulysses has men to kill her too.
But will there come anybody hither to slay her?
Yea, truly. Ulysses will be here anon with a great company of men to take her away.
Is he commanded to do so? Or doth he it but of his own head?
No, truly, he is not commanded.
Alas, then he hath taken upon him a wicked deed, seeing he will defile himself with the danger and death of my daughter.
Truly, but I will not suffer him.
But if he go about to take my daughter away with strong power, what shall I do then?
You were best to keep her by you, for the matter shall be driven to that point.
And then Iphigenia throws a spanner in the works and decides that it's a far, far better thing and all that self-sacrifice jazz.
Hearken, O mother, I pray you unto my words, for I perceive you are angry with your husband, which you may not do. For you cannot obtain your purpose by that means, and you ought rather to have thanked Achilles, because he so gently hath promised you his help, which may happen to bring him into a great mischief. I would counsel you, therefore, to suffer this trouble patiently, for I must needs die, and will suffer it willingly. Consider, I pray you, mother, for what a lawful cause I shall be slain. Doth not both the destruction of Troy and also the wealth of Greece, which is the most fruitful country of the world, hang upon my death? And if this wicked enterprise of the Trojans be not revenged, then truly the Grecians shall not keep neither their children nor yet their wives in peace. And I shall not only remedy all these things with my death, and also get a glorious renown to the Grecians for ever. Again, remember how I was not born for your sake only, but rather for the commodity of my country. Think you, therefore, that it is meet that such a company of men, being gathered together to avenge the great injury which all Greece has suffered, should be let of their journey for my cause? Surely, mother, we cannot speak against this. For do you not think it to be better that I should die than so many noblemen to be let of their journey for one woman's sake? For one nobleman is better than 1,000 women. Besides this, seeing my death is determined amongst the gods, truly no mortal man ought to withstand it. Wherefore, I will offer myself willingly to death for my country, for by this means I shall not only leave a perpetual memory of my death, but I shall cause also the Grecians to rule over the barbarians, which doth, as it were, properly belong to them. For the Grecians by nature are free, like as the barbarians are born to bondage.
To save blood being shed, I will give myself up. The chorus statement that follows is a trifle confusing, and Achilles is suddenly full of love for her, hot to trot for the self-sacrificing maiden type.
Surely you are happy, O Iphigenia, that you can suffer so patiently all this trouble.
Truly, I would count myself happy if I have obtained thee, Iphigenia, to be my wife. And I think thee, Greece, to be very fortunate because thou hast nourished such a one. For you have spoken very well in that you will not strive against the determination of the gods. Wherefore, I, being not only moved with pity, for that I see you brought into such a necessity, but also stirred up more with love towards you, desiring to have you to my wife, will promise you faithfully to withstand the Grecians as much as shall lie in my power, that they shall not slay you.
Surely I have spoken even as I thought indeed. Wherefore I shall desire you, O Achilles, not to put yourself in danger for my cause, but suffer me rather to save all Greece with my death.
Truly, I wonder greatly at the boldness of your mind. And because you seem to be so willing to die, I cannot speak against you. Yet, nevertheless, I will promise to help you still, lest you should happen to change your mind.
Exit Achilles, who is probably very glad to have got out of this situation with his honour intact. Clytemnestra is less happy, though precisely how she expresses this is a bit confused. It seems that she's both stoically holding it in and tearing her clothes at the same time. Of course, the more Iphigenia tries to tell her not to mourn, the worse it is.
Wherefore, mother, do you hold your peace, lamenting so within yourself?
Alas, I, wretched creature, have great cause to mourn.
Be of good comfort, mother, I pray you, and follow my counsel. Do not tear your clothes so.
How can I do otherwise, seeing I shall lose you?
I pray you, mother, study not to save my life, for I shall get you much honour by my death.
What? Shall not I lament your death?
No, truly you ought not, seeing that I shall both be sacrificed to the goddess Diana and also save Greece.
Well, I will follow your counsel, daughter, seeing you have spoken so well. But tell me, what shall I say to your sisters from you?
Desire them, I pray you, not to mourn for my death.
And what shall I say unto the other virgins from you?
Bid them all farewell in my name, and pray you for my sake bring up my little brother Orestes till he come to man's age.
Somewhere around here, we need a servant with Orestes again, if they haven't remained on stage throughout. Orestes just pops in and out depending on when the narrative needs him.
Take your leave of him, for this is the last day that ever you shall see him.
Farewell, my well-beloved brother, for I am even as it were compelled to love you, because you were so glad to help me.
And again, maybe exit servant with Orestes. Or they can just step out of the main action.
Is there any other thing that I may do for you at Greece?
No, truly. But I pray you not to hate my father for this deed. For he is compelled to do it for the wealth and honour of Greece.
If he hath done this willingly, then truly he hath committed a deed far unworthy of such a noble man as he is.
Again, we infer here the entrance of soldiers. The scene is closing in. The reality of the noble sacrifice is bleeding into the fiction that Iphigenia has painted for it. Clytemnestra wants to go with her, but Iphigenia says no. An interesting question in staging is whether she gets a choice. I see soldiers holding them apart.
Who is this soldier that will carry me hence so soon?
I will go with you, O daughter.
Take heed, I pray you, lest you happen to do that which shall not become you. Wherefore, O mother, I pray you to follow my counsel and tarry here still, for I must needs to go be sacrificed unto the goddess Diana.
And will you go away, O daughter, leaving me, your mother, here?
Yea, surely, mother, I must go from you unto a place from whence I shall never come again, although I have not deserved it.
I pray you, daughter, tarry, and do not forsake me now.
Surely, I will go hence, mother, for if I did tarry, I should move you to more lamentation. Wherefore I shall desire all you women to sing a some song of my death, and to prophesy good luck unto the Grecians. For with my death, I shall purchase unto them a glorious victory. Bring me therefore unto the altar of the temple of the goddess Diana, that with my blood I may pacify the wrath of the gods against you.
Oh, Queen Clytemnestra of most honour, after what fashion shall we lament, seeing we may not show any token of sadness at the sacrifice?
I would not have you mourn for my cause,
for I will not refuse to die.
Indeed. By this means you shall get yourself a perpetual renown forever.
Alas, thou son, which art comfort to man's life. Oh, thou light which doth make joyful all creatures. I shall be compelled by and by to forsake you all, and to change my life.
Exit Iphigenia with soldiers, the last exchange being with the chorus, who are less painful to part company with. The chorus then bridge the gap to the next scene, giving us a just enough passage of time for the event to have happened.
Behold, yonder goeth the virgin to be sacrificed with a great company of soldiers after her, whose beautiful face and fair body anon shall be defiled with her own blood. Yet happy art thou, O Iphigenia, that with thy death thou shalt purchase unto the Grecians a quiet passage, which I pray God may not only happen fortunately unto them, but also that they may return again prosperously, with a glorious victory.
Enter Nuncius. The messenger has news, but it's not quite what everyone expects. Though we are prepped for a wonder, it takes them a long time to get to the actual message.
Come hither, O Clytemnestra, for I must speak with you.
Tell me, I pray you, what would you with me that you call so hastily? Is there any more mischief in hand that I must hear of?
I must tell you of a wonder which hath happened at the sacrificing of your daughter.
Show me, I pray you, quickly what it is!
As we went unto the place where the sacrifice should be, and passed through the pleasant field where the whole host waited for your daughter, Agamemnon, seeing her brought unto her death, began to lament and weep. But she, perceiving what moan her father made, said unto him these words, O father, I am come hither to offer my body willingly for the wealth of my country. Wherefore, seeing that I shall be sacrificed for the commodity of all Greece, I do desire you that none of the Grecians may slay me privily, for I will make no resistance against you. And when she had spoken these words, all they which were present were wonderfully astonished at the stoutness of her mind. So after this, Achilles, with the rest of the whole host, began to desire the goddess Diana that she would accept the sacrifice of the virgin's blood, and that she would grant them a prosperous success of their journey. And when they had made an end, the priest, taking the sword in his hand, began to look for a place convenient where he may slay your daughter. Suddenly, there chanced a great wonder, for although all the people heard the voice of the stroke, yet she vanished suddenly away. Huh? And when all they marvelling at it gave a great scritch, then there appeared unto them a white hart lying before the altar, struggling for life.
So, like Abraham and Isaac, there is a godly intervention and a replacement animal to sacrifice. Though unlike Abraham and Isaac, the sacrifice isn't stopped. Iphigenia is still gone. Forever. To the gods? Maybe.
And Calchas, being then present and seeing what had happened, did wonderfully rejoice and told the captains that this heart was sent of the goddess because she would not have her altar defiled with the blood of your daughter. Moreover, he said that this was a token of good luck and that their journey should chance prosperously unto them. Wherefore, he willed that they should tarry no longer here. And when this was so finished, Agamemnon willed me to show all these things unto you because that I, myself, was present then. Wherefore I shall desire you to think no unkindness in the king your husband, for surely the secret power of the gods will save them who they love. For this day your daughter hath been both alive and dead.
The chorus take this as good news, but Clytemnestra isn't comforted. A, because she thinks this might be bollocks, a deliberate propaganda stunt, and B, even if it's true, she will still never see her daughter again.
Surely, O Clytemnestra, you ought to rejoice of this news, that your daughter is taken up into heaven?
But I am in doubt whether I should believe that thou, O daughter, art amongst the gods, or else that they have feigned it to comfort me.
The chorus announce the arrival of Agamemnon. He'll surely tell us the truth.
Behold, yonder cometh Agamemnon, who can tell the truth of all this matter.
Truly, wife, we are happy for our daughter's sake, for surely she is placed in heaven. But now I think it best that you go home, seeing that we shall take our journey so shortly unto Troy. Wherefore now, fare you well. And of this matter I will commune more at my return, and in the mean season I pray God send you well to do and your heart's desire.
It's a bit more political than personal. He doesn't really tell us what the truth is. Clytemnestra utters no reply, and the chorus deliver a final response. On the surface, a triumphant cry for hope. But we know it all ends very badly. So irony all round.
Oh, happy Agamemnon. The gods grant thee a fortunate journey unto Troy, and a most prosperous return again.
And there the play ends. It's, in staging terms, a simplified and shortened version of Euripides' original play. There are no big chorus numbers, no dancing or singing. It's now a comfortable chamber piece in line with Seneca's interpretation of Greek drama. And as such is very stageable today, because it is very simple. 8 or fewer performers, a certain lack of literal staging in places, and this is a tight 70-minute show, possibly less if you do a little bit of editorial work to tidy up some of the more awkward sentences. But, as our recording hopefully shows, you can perform it without changes. But that's up to you. And that's it from this spoilers episode. If you have any thoughts about my brief breakdown of the text, or if you have any disagreements with my thoughts, or if I am in plain error, it does happen sometimes, let me know. I might re-edit based on your thoughts. Or not. If you'd like more on this play, there are exploring sessions on the podcast and the YouTube. Links are in the show description. The full cast audio adaptation edit of this will follow soon, so keep an ear out for that. In the plain text used throughout this recording, the cast was as follows. Sarah Blake was the argument and chorus. Aliki Chapel was Agamemnon. Liza Graham was Senex. Valentina Vici was Menelaus. Alexander Kataghida was Clytemnestra. Minna Pang was Iphigenia. Emma Kemp, Achilles. And Melissa Shirley as Nuncius. The play was directed by Sarah Blake and recorded by Robert Crichton. And many thanks go to Liza Graham and Helen Good for helping make this show come into reality. And of course, thanks to all our wonderful patrons for supporting it too, who voted for it in the first place. This spoilers episode was hosted and produced by myself, Robert Crichton, for the Beyond podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook or Instagram at Beyond Shakes, or visit our website at beyondshakespeare.org, or support our work by becoming a patron at patreon.com/beyondshakespeare. They choose the plays we work on next, so why not become one of them? But till the full cast audio adaptation drops, that's it from me. Goodbye.